Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Ahoy, ahoy.
And Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Good day, m'lady.
Yeah, gentlemen. Well, I took your advice and I went ahead and I bought the Bamboo A1 3D printer.
Wait, hold on. Andrew, the last time that we talked about this, you said you have a lot of very important projects that you're working on and that
Brian,
you were...
Justin, cut the camera to me.
Oh, sorry. A switchblade 3D printed knife just came out.
Oh my God. What's hilarious about this is that I was literally on the phone with Andrew yesterday afternoon as he was pulling this out of the packaging. So within the last, certainly less than 24 hours, like the last 20 hours, he has 3D printed a pocket knife.
A stiletto.
Cut to the camera back here.
All right.
Oh my God.
Also, he's 3D printed one of those things where you pull it, the gears turn, and a whirligig just goes flying off.
The quality on these prints is the Bamboo A1 printer right now, which, by the way, we talked about before because I had lamented to anybody who would listen, which is not a very long list, about how bad 3D printers still were over a decade after they were supposed to have their moment. And Bamboo has their the A1 Mini. And what's nice about them is they are, was not a paid promotion. You can buy the whole printer with, by the way, you'll notice this is printed. This was all printed at once.
What?
Black, white,
so,
and
so,
blue.
For audio listeners, we have three different colors of resin in there.
Yeah. And so the filament, so it basically, and the print was cool is what it did is it went and it printed the blue thing on one part of the print plate, then went printed the black part, the spring, and then printed the blade on another part all at once. Right. And so it took 45 minutes, which in 3D print world, like
that's like 11 seconds. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. This is a huge speed up. So, I mean, that was, you know, 45 minutes to make a thing with a spring mechanism like that was insane. That printer, by the way, was on sale complete. It has this, the printer, and it has this device that has the four different colored filaments that feeds into it. The whole thing, $500.
Damn.
Wait, the whole thing that created everything you just showed us was $500
yep.
total?
Out the door.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's been the quality you're getting now at this price is insane. They have a smaller version, which is on sale for like, if you just want to do one filament, they have a smaller one that's like $200.
Damn. But really the magic is in the multiple filaments, right? Like that's what makes this thing special.
Yeah. Brian, I'm sending you the link if you want to just take a look at this. And it's a toy. I got it to sort of play around with, but also the fact that one of the pivots I've been seeing, a lot of people in AI are now getting into hardware. A lot of some people at OpenAI and some other people are now getting very interested in the idea of what can we do in the physical world now that we have a lot more intelligence, a lot more systems. And this knife was great because somebody thought out there's a, at Brigham Young University, there's an entire lab that studies what they call compliant mechanisms, which are basically like solid one-piece mechanisms that have multiple actions, like pliers and other kinds of tools that you can 3D print, because also they're useful if you want to make things at a very tiny scale, too. I think with Mark Rober, they did an experiment where they built like a tiny Nerf gun that is like, you know, extremely, extremely small, like fit on, you know, the tip of a Q-tip. But this is the printer. And so that's the whole setup there. As you can see, that's got the four different spools that are controlled by motor, the print, all that. Like, it's just insane.
How fast is it? And by the way, the link is store.bambulab, bamboolab.com.
Bamboo is in with you. Yeah. Like this was 45 minutes to print this, which if you're familiar with 3D printing, you know, we're seeing your whole screen, Brian.
Sorry. you can see all the Instagram spam that's showing up.
I know. There should be an automatic block on Twitter. Anything that starts with Instagram, just block that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. I opened up. Thank you for letting me know.
No problem. So anyhow, I think that we're going to see these effects in other places, because when you start building robotics machines and other kinds of tooling, it's pretty cool. There's been a resurgence in South LA and Southern California, rather, in the El Segundo. They call it the Gundo, which is a new area. Well, it's been there for a long time.
Yeah. But
the whole, you have SpaceX there. You have, you know, Andrews in Orange County, which is the fence manufacturer. There's robotics companies. You know, somebody told me, they said, yeah, like if you want to get a part machined, you know, overnight, there are 24-hour machine shops there, which is insane.
And if you, because you there's so much explosion in that field, with the idea being that AI can provide something that like will be unlocked by custom hardware. Yeah. And now these machines are cheap enough, and we have experience enough with them that it's its own cottage industry.
And you're getting, there's really interesting stuff in machine learning of taking scans of objects and then making meshes to print them from. So you take an object like this. This is an iPhone stand, right? And so you're, this entire device, even probably the mechanism for holding, clamping it, if you used a compliant mechanism, you could 3D print now. You could 3D print the whole thing. Now, thing is, what's 3D printing is great for is making a few of a thing. When you want to make a lot of a thing, you know, the company, the 3D printer they send you, you know, they don't 3D print the parts on there, because, you know, they're making 1,000 of these at a time. So it's more cost effective to do that. But I bet you most of the parts were prototyped. I bet you, you know, the prototype phase. And for certain smaller runs of things, you know, I made a magic trick a long time ago that I barely made money on, because it's just, you know, the print overages and whatnot. But today, if I were to produce the same thing, I'd make a much bigger profit using more state-of-the-art printers.
Well, and at what point do we cross a threshold where it's a bad idea to even bother to make it at your own house and then ship it through USPS to deliver it? At what point does the general populace become aware? It's like, okay, I could wait 3 days for this to show up in the mail, or I could print it myself. Like, at what point do we have that permeation?
So one of the first things I made on the printer was the printer, because it's very good at cleaning the filaments. Like, it's amazing watching the process, because it starts off, it makes sure the bed is level. There's none of that calipers and stuff you used to have to use. And then it has to wipe away the filament that it has. And it has a scraper device that goes over to scrape across and remove the excess filament. Well, that just drops it onto the floor. So I needed a bucket for that. And so I just found a 3D print for a bucket for that. And ran it through the printer. And then, you know, after a few hours, I had my bucket to put the excess materials in there. So let me see if I can find.
Yo, dog, I heard you like 3D printers. So I used a 3D printer to 3D print a bucket to get the excess from your 3D printer.
So right now I've got a video of that's a video from when it was printing the bucket. It should update. Now you can see it's printing another knife.
Okay.
Yeah. And so it'll do time lapses. So there's a camera, like, it's incredible, because
So the camera's built into it. Like, they know that one thing everybody who 3D prints anything loves is to have a video made.
Not only loves, but also what they hate the most is that they start a 3D print and then for whatever reason something goes wrong.
And they don't know why.
And it's like just screwed. And so, like, Andrew mentioned 45 minutes is the fastest that anyone's 3D printed anything that complex ever. So a lot of these things are, you know, pushing into 10, 12, 25 hours, you know, depending on the complexity of stuff. So the peace of mind of being able to know, if this got screwed, I need to restart. I can restart now because I have the peace of mind that this thing went bad, as opposed to just the next time you happen to wander by and it's like, oh, well, this thing has been screwed. I've wasted filament. I've wasted time. This is bad. That's a really, really, really smart creature comfort.
And they put in some simple AI in there. So if, let's say, you get like the spaghetti where it starts missing and spooling out all over, the AI is supposed to flag that and tell you if there's a problem with the filament. If, let's say, it's pulling that, you run out of filament. If you have the same color filament on there, it'll just switch to the other spool.
Oh, wow.
So you can, if you want to do a really complex print, you just put four spools of the same colored material on there and then it will run through them. If you get a snag or some sort of like, you know, error, it will pause the print and you can often fix it, which you could never do before with like, you know, the original printers. The idea that you could actually recover a print and keep going. The one example I saw somebody said they had a problem with was their power shut down and the printer could pick up after the power shut down. But the problem was, is the plate had started to cool down. Mm. And so the plate had cooled down and then that you lose adhesion. But I mean, those are minor sorts of things. And if you think about when you're talking about a printer that if you just wanted to print one color, you know, a $350 printer, if you were doing a print farm where you just do like if you're doing multiple, you know, single parts at a time, it's insane. But when you see the multicolor printing, some of the multicolor prints are really, really, really amazing what you can do with some of these different new materials.
There is aesthetically something primal to just like these are spools of plastic and they get fed into the thing. And it's like it's so simple that everybody can grasp it. It occurs to me recently there was an episode of the Modern Rogue where we talked about my parents would buy books that just had page after page of basic programming. And I would sit there and I would type it all in and then be able to play Mancala afterwards and so on. It occurs to me that the next generation that's coming up right now, 50 years from now, will be able to roll their eyes and say, I remember when in order to 3D print a thing, you had to actually look at the physical spools to go in. I guess that's a long way to get to the question of what do you think 3D printing looks like 30, 40, 50 years from now?
Well, I think in that time frame, you know, we are probably doing molecular assembly or something. It's going to be a, you know, tank full of proteins or whatever they're going to make. What
yeah.
you want.
That soon?
Build me a new arm.
50 years?
Yeah, I guess so. 50 years. Yeah. Like if I go back 50 years in computing, 50 years ago is what? 1975. So that's Voyager era computation. We've come a fair bit from then.
You think? We have the thing we have to account for too is the acceleration that AI gets into this because, you know, we are, and we'll talk about, you know, one of the new thing coming out of Anthropic, Claude 3 Sonnet. But, you know, when you put a print farm in there and I have a bunch of data and I have it going to an AI system and I'm trying to figure out, you know, the term again, compliant mechanisms, which are really helpful if you make them on a micro scale. So this device, this switchblade, would work on a microchip. You know, if you look at what an airbag sensor looks like, you know, it's actually very similar to that sort of springing kind of mechanism. When you get into this area where we're now getting AIs that understand mesh mechanisms, you know, we're getting AI that understand 3D structures. And so when you start thinking about the accelerations that happen there, when I can run 1,000 experiments and have a GPT-4 level AI monitor the success and outcome of that, you just get a rapid advancement in knowledge.
Yeah. I know sooner or later we're going to divert into AI talk. So I'm going to hold off on what I was going to say.
Have you seen there are companies now that do 3D printed shoes.
Go on.
So they do, cause there's a lot of these different filaments that like some are flexible. Some are, you know, have like durability, like, You could print your own Crocs with a thing like that. And I don't know why you'd want to.
I was about to say.
Yeah. But yeah, there's a, let me see. There's a brand called Fused Footwear. Fusedfootwear.com.
Okay.
And you can see their crazy shoes. And
there we go. I've got it up on the, oh my God. It's like if a Cybertruck was a low damn. Poly shoe boot, then yeah.
Yeah. It's like when you look at the way Kanye West dresses and you're like, too subtle.
yeah. Too subtle. But I see this becoming a thing.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I mean, especially for high fashion, if you have the right sway and you have the right marketing, you can sell it at a premium because fashion is something that is sold at a premium. But also you could have the option to do it a little bit cheaper because of the way that you're printing it.
Oh man, I guess I'll text this to the fan. I mean, how much would we spend on five pairs of shoes? What if we just printed all our shoes from now on? Yes, everyone will make fun of us and we'll get beat up at the bus stop, but it'll be a wash. I can now justify this bamboo.
So there's, you know, kind of a, what's interesting about the 3D printing is you're after you buy the printer, your cost is effectively your materials. And there's a company or somebody selling a very interesting tool head for a 3D printer where it lets you use, because all plastic, every piece of plastic you had around you started off as pellets.
Mm-hmm.
And then you melt the pellets. And so even the 3D filament that made this was at one point pellets that then got melted into the filament, which has a pretty, you know, the part of what helps is making sure the filament has a very high tolerance. But if you just buy the pellets directly, your cost is like 15-20%. And I see that as being a thing where you just load up a bunch of colored pellets into a thing and, you know, you're going to pay for, and this was, I explored this as a business years ago, which was basically a Netflix for 3D prints.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the idea that what you're really trying to sell people is just reliability of knowing the print's going to work. And so the way you price a thing isn't per, you know, device you make. It's going to be, you know, basically for access to a catalog that lets you print things.
Because right? You are selling quality control. Selling the curation.
Yeah. And if you do that, you could incentivize people to, cause like, you know, Bamboo Labs, you know, I paid their filament prices. What's neat about their filament, by the way, is they have an RFID chip in there. So when you load it onto that machine, it spins it around, loads it, and it knows what color filament it is.
Wait, so all of the when you say the filament, you mean all of the filament or like the beginning of a filament spool or
the spool itself has an RFID chip in
it. Got it. So the actual thing that the filament is wrapped around,
if you look
self-identifies.
If you look at the device that connects to that holds the filament, when it spins it around, there's an RFID sensor in there and it looks and says, oh, this is yellow filament number 22. So we got to use this profile for it.
That's just great.
Yeah. Super smart. It just, you felt like this feels like a third generation printer.
Well, and not just, it's not just smart in the ability to say wrong things, sir, but also to say like, okay, here's what we can and can't do with this. We recommend that you know, we can offset the problems with this filament. You know, and this will be constantly updated with firmware updates and so on. But it's like, okay, we noticed that you use this one. It has this plasticity problem that can be offset with this other filament. Why don't you buy more of blank? And then that way we could still use this other thing.
So somebody put in the, I don't know if you clicked on this, check on Cheech SP's link.
Okay.
Thank you, Cheech, by the way.
Oh my God. All right. So somebody has sent us a Reddit link. Justin, describe to everybody what we're looking at right here.
I never thought I'd see the day, folks. It is a pink and yellow croc being 3D printed.
That's awesome. This is at Bamboo Lab, the subreddit. That's awesome.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Just in time for Pride.
Yeah, that's using an enclosed one. So for some of those materials like that, you might not get as much success using the open air printer like I have. So their enclosed systems are they're like $1,000. But
some for real stuff. Like you can print a croc in a closed version, huh?
Yeah.
Damn. So when you're buying filament, Andrew,
Brian, all the crocs you can print, this is at your fingertips. You can just be printing crocs all day. Hey kids, guess what? Birthdays, Christmases, Arbor Day, Bat Flag Mitzvahs. Day, croc, croc, croc.
So, do they,
like I'm on the Nile. That's what I'm sending you. Crocs, baby. Toothy grin. Better watch out. Because Brian's slinging Crocs. Crocs.
When you buy.
Betty Crocker. That's Brian's nickname. Boy, he's slinging these Crocs. Start a GoFundMe because this man needs to be filling up all of our stockings with Crocs. throwing Crocs like he's a strong man at a weird circus that gets its license revoked. That's what he's going to be.
When?
Not an alligator. Different. It's a croc.
All right. All right.
When Justin runs subroutine other show. Andrew, when you buy the filaments, I understand that color, of course, will be a factor, but do they classify like flexibility or stretchiness or rubberiness or any of those things?
Yeah, there is entirely different categories. Like those shoes we're using, I think what's called a TPU, which is a different material. And that's why like that shoe looks almost like it was just somebody just put a shoe inside of the 3D printer. It just looks like that.
Yeah.
That stuff just sticks to the build plate really well. So yeah, you get different kinds of filament based on what you're trying to do in different 3D printers. Like I said, the one that I have probably wouldn't be able to print that shoe because it's an open air printer. But you know, other kinds of thrillment, you know, it just depends. Like I'm using just PLA, so, which is the kind of the easiest one to work with.
We touched on this a little bit before. Let's say, you know, somebody essentially just hears the words about $500, 3D printer. Where do they go to get the, as the Joker once said about Gotham's greatest hero, where do you get these wonderful toys?
What do you mean?
I mean, where do you go to download the things? Yeah. No. Where do you go to find the good prints?
MakerWorld.com.
What?
So MakerWorld.com. Mm-hmm. So basically there's Thingiverse, whatever, but Bamboo Labs has MakerWorld plugged in. So this is my app for monitoring my print, right?
Okay.
I can clip on models and all of a sudden I'm taken to a catalog of models to print. And let's see if I get
smart. Focus.
I can find a thing that I like and I can just click it, send to printer. And it works better than my damn Canon printer.
So you could do this, like you could be out at a brew pub meeting somebody and they're like, this is the nice shoes. And then you can, while you're out and about, just click a button and say, send a printer. And when you get home, you'll have those shoes.
Assuming my print plate is cleared and doesn't have anything on there. Absolutely.
And I would assume that your printer with the camera and AI will know if your print plate's empty, right?
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, you can just, I started like, you know, one of the prints, you know, from the other room. I'm like, oh, I want to build a thing. And so I just was in the other room and said, okay, go ahead, click print. And it went to start printing it.
And that is awesome. And I literally, there are a bunch of jokes I want to make. However, the proof is in the pudding.
You should not, Brian. Don't make any jokes because it's not a joking matter that everybody should go to patreon.com/weirdthings.
Patreon.com/weirdthings. What's this?
Very seriously. Don't type with any kind of crazy finger movements. Type it straight down the middle. Patreon.com/weirdthings. It's where you support this show.
I'm sorry. I accidentally went to patreon.com.
Be serious. Brian, it's not a joke. Patreon.com/weirdthings is where you support independent podcasting like this. Head on over there right now and make sure that you get on the team. Patreon.com/weirdthings.
Big week in AI, which we can say every week.
I was about to say, is that the sound of somebody breathing that I just heard?
Yeah.
So yesterday on Twitter, I see Anthropic dropping a little teaser with a Morse code and a little key that they had that you had to break for it. And then I went out for a walk and apparently they had unveiled it in the intervening time. And that is a new model, a new Claude model, huh?
So they unveiled Claude Sonnet, which Sonnet was like in their model tiers. They have Haiku, Sonnet, and then Opus. And Sonnet's like their kind of middle tier, but they just dramatically improved Claude Sonnet. And some evals appears to be better than GPT-4o in some tasks.
Damn.
They also created I'm all about giving credit where credit's due. They also created kind of a very cool thing called Artifacts, which is, I'll do a demo here. Let me see if I can share this.
Meanwhile, like, Anthropic is funded by which company?
It has money from Amazon. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they have funding from all over. They initially had $500 million of money from FTX.
How did that work out?
That investment turned out to be worth something. So, you know, I think they're a highly capable company. They build great models. I'm going to create a 2D platformer with a ghost that I control and dodge.
So I noticed lightning. That you're not specifying what language or anything. You just sort of just threw it out there.
Yeah, I'll let it do what it's, you know, let it figure out what language it wants to do. So what they have is a thing called artifacts, which what it will do is that it will basically, and I may need to told it to do that, but it's generating this, and you can see it's writing the code on the right.
It selected the platform. It says, you want a game? And that's one of those little, tidbits that I find a lot of people find counterintuitive with AI prompts is like, the less specific you are, the more freedom it has to just give you what you want, the better off you are. Like in this case, you said, you didn't say open a JavaScript prompt or whatever. You said, I want a game, and it decided to make it out of HTML, CSS, and JavaScript.
Yeah. So it gave me, I have my lightning bolts. I have a white screen, but I can't see the ghost. So I'm going to say, I can't see the ghost, use emoji and make the background black.
So this is also, and we've talked about this, this might be a little bit of more after things talk, but we've talked about how having an AI is very familiar to anybody who's been a boss or a manager or a director, where you just sort of wave your hands and explain what you want, and then things get either closer or farther away from your vision. So that's extraordinarily impressive that you're able to be so loosey-goosey in your language. Okay, so where are we at now? Audio listeners, you're seeing an emoji of a ghost side-scrolling to the right with a bunch of yellow letter eyes, essentially. Yeah. It looks a little bit like ASCII art. And so the new prompt is add points, make the ghost bounce up and down, use physics, and that's literally all he typed. So we are now three prompts in, and we have a side-scrolling thing. And I would imagine that from here you can add, like, put a life meter, deduct 1 point every time the ghost touches one of these.
Wow. Et cetera. And so that's what the artifact thing is that it's just running it right next to it.
Runs the code that I told it to.
Yeah. Wow, that's cool.
And we can do that too if you're working on a document. I'll show you how that works. But so now, clicking that screen, boom. Oh, I can't control the ghost. What happened? There we go. Boom, boom.
Oh, are you hitting the space bar or what?
I'm hitting my up arrow. So every time I hit it and I hit a ghost, then I get points. So you could just see, you could clearly, we went from three prompts to be able to create
a thing
like this.
That's remarkably fast. Okay, yeah. So how does one sign up for Anthropic?
Well, after you have an OpenAI subscription, then I will allow. You just go to anthropic.com or claude.ai.
Okay. That's amazing. Let me see if I can do that. claude.ai. Okay. So I'm there now, and I guess I'll sign in with Google. Why not? This is our new bit is Brian signs up for everything and Andrew explains to him what he's doing.
So here I asked it to write a screenplay. And so on the right side of the screen, it's created a form of a screenplay. It's using kind of like a markdown format. So what's nice is you can iterate on the thing to the right, which I think it's a really, really good capability. Somebody I know at a certain AI company argued for years, but.
How would you say that Claude compares with OpenAI's work at this point. Like, and I don't mean in quality, because like this is not a binary better than less than, like in terms of flavors.
Well, one of the things Anthropic, I think, rightly focused on was language and the idea of how do you use language and how do you write well? And I think that their models write really well. I think that they have a better grasp. I don't think they're like, I don't think they necessarily generalize about writing better, but I think they use better examples. Although expect the OpenAI ones to get really good really fast. Their capabilities, I think, you know, now probably, you know, a lot of people like this model. I think it's price-wise, I think it's the same as GPT-4o. GPT-4o, though, has a lot more capabilities when it comes to like the end-to-end voice and whatnot. But for many of the tasks you're going to want to do, you know, this is probably going to be perfectly fine. And so I gave it one line, create a maze game with a vampire theme.
Yeah. Brian, you want to go back to the moon?
Back to Andrew. Yeah. There we go.
Oops.
Oh, so it's, are you the moon or the vampire?
I'm the skull. No, I think I'm the moon. Yeah, I'm the moon. I'm the moon. That was online. I can just give it like, you know, use a vampire emoji.
So this is interesting. So the nomenclature of Claude 3.5 makes me think of ChatGPT 3.5, which is not as smart nearly as 4.0 and on. But Claude 3.5, I should set my brain to about a smart.
That is now the state of the art of the Claude Sonnet models. And so,
it actually outperforms Opus in some ways.
Yeah.
Which means that we're probably going to see an Opus 3.5, which would be even more capable. I mean, that clearly, yeah.
You know, and what's interesting is, as you mentioned, 4.0 is something that, at least by OpenAI's own demonstration, is really something that sings with its app that has yet to be released. And the model itself has been very, very capable, but you know what it can do in terms of how fast it is and how good multimodal it is. It's something that I think we've kind of yet to see it, at least the way that OpenAI demonstrated it on a large scale. Which does make me wonder. I mean, like OpenAI has been very, very good about just shipping. And I will say that this has gone a little bit longer that we have not seen even, you know, slow leaking out of the new app than I thought it was going to be. But then again, maybe I need to reset my expectations.
Yeah, the challenge with the new one, because of the multimodal capability, is going to be a matter of how do you get it to deploy it across, you know, the advantage OpenAI has and the disadvantages. OpenAI serves by far as the most largest provider of these services. And so when they put out a feature, the demand's going to be in the millions, not hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
Real quick, so, Andrew.
Can I just show you the thing, though? So
Sure.
One of the things... So I wanted to build a maze. The problem with the maze is that it was building before, as they did, like the first one didn't connect, right? And like this very first one, the door was not connected. And that's because it was probably kind of doing random. So I told it there's a pathfinding algorithm, you know, called A*. And I'm like, oh, we'll use A* to go do this. And so that's where it helps to know a little bit of code and or math. But sorry, Brian, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to ask just now. I tried, you know, do a side scrolling thing with Justin, Brian, and Andrew chasing goblin spiders and snakes, and it seems to have done it. But it says that Claude does not have the ability to run the code it generates yet.
Did not enable in the special features.
Okay.
So you need to go into your account and then look for.
In settings,
feature preview.
Okay.
Preview.
Yep.
Artifacts. Click on.
Turn it on.
Got it.
Baby.
Turn artifacts
turn
on.
It okay. On.
And then I close it. And then what? Hit refresh.
Yeah, start a new session.
Okay. All right. We'll see. Well, here. Let me
copy that
copy floppy. The prompt.
Yeah.
There we go. And so then I guess what? Click a plus. New, I'm going to start new, a new one. New I'm going to paste that right in. It says here, whoa, dear. I copied the wrong thing.
Oh, no.
Everything's screwed up. I'm a bad person.
Welcome to Tech Talk with Grandpa.
There we go. Let me copy the right thing this time. Create a side-scrolling page depicting Justin, Andrew, and Brian chasing a bunch of character creatures, including snakes, spiders, and goblins. Going to click plus on that. Going to paste this in. All right, Claude 3.5, show me what you got. It's generating everything real time. You can watch it write the code using HTML and CSS. We'll add some basic animation. And now it's running. I don't know who's who.
Well, that's where you keep prompting, baby.
All right. Wow. It's very, very easy to do this stuff. I guess I'll just prompt, keep the three main characters, characters in the leftmost third of the screen. Keep the creatures in the rightmost third of the screen. And it auto completed that part. Add a starry night background. Okay, so now I can't believe I'm two prompts in. I'm already this far. So it's generating right now. We're watching it create the real-time script. A bunch of HTML is happening. It definitely restated back to me everything correctly. And now there's a chase scene. It's still scrolling. Now I'm going to get short. I'm going to say main characters should look human and be running.
So when you, the thing you have to think about is when you say look human, it's got to figure out how it's supposed to do that. And if you say use emoji, then it goes, oh, I'm going to use emoji. But if you say look human, it might be thinking, oh, do I have, you know, do I have access to some 3D assets or some GIFs or something like that? So you really want to work within the scope of what the system can do.
Yeah, I phrased it loosey-goosey right now. I said characters should look human, camera should be panning, which maybe is a mistake. Well, we're about to find out. Okay, well, we do have the starry background. Yeah, I wonder... Okay, all right. I don't want to get all the way into tech support, but already this is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Your ability to build tools and everything else. It's very cool. So meanwhile, we had a couple video generators drop this week, and we had La Luma Dream.
La Luma?
Studio. Luma Dream Booth. Let me get the name right.
Dream Machine? Luma Dream Machine AI?
Yep.
Luma-AI.com is where I'm peeking right now. So here, I'll hit play on their demo video. But we're looking at, I don't know, a bunch of things happening. Tell me about this.
So, yeah, what website are you on?
Luma-AI.com. And
try lumalabs.ai.
Okay. LumaLabs.ai.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the official site. So they've trained their own video generator model that you can sign up right now and you can start creating videos with. I'll go log into my account and show you. And I think they can do really cool videos. And some of these other systems, your Runway ML came out with a cool system. The thing, because people are immediately like, ah, they're Sora competitors, you know, OpenAI Sora. And the thing that it's clear once you know what to look for is Sora is a physics simulator. Like the goal of Sora is to simulate physics. And I can give you an example of that where I'm going to go over to OpenAI Sora. Let me share my screen here. And I'll show you a really, really key thing to sort of look at, which is... when you look at Sora and you go through the examples, you see a lot of like really cool, you know, pretty, you know, images and stuff. When we watch these mammoths, you know, you see the cloud of smoke and whatnot come up behind them. When we go to a
Sora's OpenAI's video engine.
Yeah. So, and again, it's a physics simulator. So if you look at these dogs in the snow, you notice that some of the snow is behaving really well, following, flying across, whatever, in slow motion. That's really, really challenging. When you go look at Luma, like I created some stuff in Luma, like I'm like, oh, like show me a light bulb breaking. And
oh, got it. And so what we have is a rough assembly of like what looks like a YouTuber's space. And we see motion and something that may or may not be a mallet, depending on where you are in the video. And we see shattering glass, but we also see a whole light bulb at the end.
Yeah. And the shattering effect is very cinematic and impressive, like almost like Harry Potter-esque, but it is not realistic in the way that a light bulb would actually shatter.
Yeah, and the hammer changes into a completely different object, and it does, like I did, like, you know, cereal falling into it. And again, you know, Sora may have fell apart, but you can see like cereal falling on the floor, and it does this nice big swooping shot, but the cereal doesn't behave like cereal. There's no bouncing. There's no physics in it.
Real quick, Andrew, is Sora still not available to the public?
No,
right?
No. But this is, you can go to, and that's the thing, Luma Labs is available. Now, I did a like a Blade Runner cityscape flying through here, and it did a really cool cityscape. But that's, you'll start to notice when you really look at it, you'll see that the challenge that video generation is going to face is physics.
Yeah. It seems like Luma right out of the gate seems to at least get the gist of what you're trying to do contextually.
You can use it, you know, and you know, to their credit, you know, same with Runway, like you're able to use it right now. Sora has a much more sophisticated model, but it's not available. So.
What's that they say? The best camera you can get is the one you have on you. Okay.
100%.
Here we go. 100%. Three podcasters running from a goblin and spiders. Not bad. That's not bad. Like if we were going to take the Weird Things podcast and make just a background running image, that's the three of us. Those are the goblin spiders who are chasing us.
Yeah. I mean, it's the hard part is you just really start to figure out like the steerability, and you see like characters morph into other characters, and you realize that like you need a really good intelligence under to do really highly capable for a lot of it. There's a lot of video that this will be perfectly fine for.
Well, especially
For example, I've been doing video versions of the PX3 show, and with a very early rudimentary AI text to video engine, I made just this image of a bunch of American flags flying that I have play under the interstitial sound that kind of denotes that one segment's done and another segment is beginning. Now I could probably have another model come up with 50 prompts for Americana, right? Like things that denote in 1 second America, and then run it through that and get probably 20 really good ones. And even if they're a little uncanny valley, it's fine for a 1 second shot. And boom, there we go.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, these things are moving fast, and there's going to be other technologies coming to play to make them more steerable, guidable, to help you kind of get what you want.
All right. So, the Luma thing says that, you can extend it with other stuff. So right now I'm typing down, we saw the beginning stuff, which was excellent already. And I wrote, then they encounter a patriotic celebration. So I'll see whether or not that,
that's really something that's amazing is the video and song extension stuff. Like I
just keep going. You get it by now.
Yeah.
You know how it goes.
What are your picks?
Yeah. I'll do picks. I got a weird one. I've been out on the road. And so like last night, you know, my kids are at that phase where it's like, they're kind of like, I don't know, what do you got to pitch us, Dad? And I don't know how we ended up here, but we ended up watching the, starring Idris Elba, the Stephen King adaptation of The Dark Tower, which I started and I warned Penelope. I'm like, look, it's not great. It does in no way encapsulate the excellence of the Dark Tower series from Stephen King. But I did, like, it took us about an hour to get through the first 20 minutes because she wanted to cackle and howl at the flaws in this thing. But I explained, you know, everything from licensing rights to money to, like, let's look at the good things. Look at the cinematography. Notice the cyan yellow combinations, you know, here. Look at the golden ratio being used here. Look how there are different languages. You read the book, so of course you get infinite words to explain things. They don't have that luxury because they're pitching to people who have never read The Dark Tower, but they need to give enough winks to the fans. Notice how they did this thing that means nothing to the casual audience, but secretly is a reference to the fans. And around 20 minutes in, she was like, all right, I think I see what you're saying. And then she got all the way into it. It's not a great Hollywood movie. It's not a satisfying adaptation of the books, but the way I phrased it to Penny was, imagine you found out that there was a community theater production of The Dark Tower. Would you go see it? The answer is yes. And you would clap very loud for the people who tried very hard. I said, that's what this movie is. So my pick is The Dark Tower. And I would say, yeah, give it a try, especially if you have read the books and want to see a community theater representation of everything.
That cost $100 million.
I know. Look, you're not wrong, Andrew. I'm with you. But
it's a very rich community.
Yeah, that is a... There are films where you watch and then you know a little behind the scenes. You're like, oh, yeah, they knew it was a flop before the shooting started. And they knew, but they were like, the studio needed a film that summer. They needed a slot. They needed a thing. And they're like, we already committed the money. And, yeah. And, you know, we're going to just go ahead and make it. And
what are we going, like, to not do this? All right, let's go.
Dead Man Walking.
Yeah, there was I think it was a Hollywood Reporter article about the tortured development hell of the Marvel Blade adaptation with Mahershala Ali. And they were apparently 2 months away from shooting a version of Blade that would have taken place in the 1920s, which I think is an interesting idea. But they wound up pulling it because it was at the point that Marvel was like, oh no, we actually need to make sure that our hits actually hit.
Yeah.
We want to.
Yeah, and I feel like Blade wasn't in it a lot, and there was just
a lot. There's apparently been three scripts now, and they've just scrapped the 1920s version. They built a gigantic train set that they are not going to use, and they might try to repurpose for another Disney movie. But a big mess of a movie for hey guys, Blade. Doesn't have to be that complicated, man.
All you have to do is
he's awesome. He has a katana. Slices up these vamps, dog.
Four words: Kris Kristofferson and tax evasion. That's all you need to have a Blade.
I it's funny, the train thing, because had they delivered on schedule, then cool, we would have had the Mission Impossible train sequence, the Indiana Jones train sequence, and the Blade train sequence all in the same summer. I think Brian, like, Mahershala Ali, I think he's amazing. He's fantastic. Last I saw Wesley Snipes, dude's in shape. Dude is ready. like, why are we not getting more Wesley Snipes as Blade?
Apparently, also, he's out there on Twitter taunting. I guess he knew that this was coming. He knew that this article was coming. But on Twitter, like 2 days before it dropped, he's like, ha, ha, ha. Still can't find the secret sauce with Blade, huh?
Well, and plus also, it's like going to jail for being confused about tax law is not the most cancelable offense I can think of.
Confused. I think he had his own philosophies on tax law.
That's fine. No, I'm doing pro bono work for him and saying, just say you were confused about it.
Well, again, I think the thing is that because that was a different studio, like, Marvel owns the IP for Blade, but the other Blade movies, it was like New Line or whatever. So
New Line. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I think that that may have been, if they did a version that was there, who knows? I just, Marvel make it work out. Like, we were told, you know, we were never going to get Spider-Man, and we got Spider-Man. And
yeah, Kevin Feige in the Hollywood Reporter article says that, and I don't know if this is a new quote or an old quote, but that Blade is very, very important to him. Because it was the lesson when he was working at Marvel proper before he became, you know, the studio executive of the decade, that Blade really taught him a lesson, that Blade was not a very well-known character. It didn't have a tremendous history in Marvel Comics, but yet they made a great movie and all of a sudden it was gigantic. And he's like, oh, wait a minute. Like, we can make a studio based on characters that aren't the characters that we've already sold off. And that was part of the DNA for him saying, like, all right, Iron Man,
Guardians,
congratulations. We are beginning with Iron Man, a tertiary character that
a highly unlikely Marvel hero that would raise, that would lift all boats.
Yeah. And turns out, you know, he was right.
Yeah.
I got a pick. Udio. Let's talk AI. My buddy Kevin Ryan was in town. I was trying to show him cool AI stuff. We started making songs. He was blown away by the quality of Udio. Went home. He has two little girls. Apparently, they will not go to sleep now unless dad makes songs for them on Udio about whatever is going through their little girl minds. So... I highly recommend, if you have not played around with song AI, with music AI, try out Udio. It's really good. I think that their UI right now is like at the point where if they start complicating it beyond this, I think it'll get too complicated, but right now it's comprehensible. And it's really, really powerful. And I don't think, for my money, the vocals are any better on another AI music generator. They do vocals extraordinarily well.
Excellent. My pick is, Justin, if I was going to ask you, like, the character of that BBC TV series about the dude who travels for time, how do you spell his name?
Wait, hold on real quick. Does he travel through time or both time and space?
Yeah, that guy. How would you spell his name?
D-O-C-T-O-R.
I can kind of tell when you started watching Doctor Who by that. Because you see, if you go all the way back to the William Hartnell origin of the role, It was Doctor Who. The show was called Doctor Who, you know, D-O-C-T-O-R. But the character was Dr. Period Who.
Gotcha. Okay.
See, don't you feel stupid?
I do. Thank you for bringing this to light.
What a dumb. Just sad. I mean, it's not like he did a Doctor Who podcast.
Fake nerd.
What is going on?
No, I don't know. I was watching I need something sort of passively watch before I go to sleep. But I've kind of run out of good stuff to watch. I'm like, I'm going to go back and start at the very beginning of Doctor Who. And so I started to watch I signed up for BritBox, and the very first episode came up with Doctor Who starring William Hartnell. And then the end credits, it said Dr. Period Who. And I think about how many times I've watched nerds get upset when you call it, you know, Dr. Period Who and not spell it out, when apparently that was totally legit the whole time.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So glad I shared that with everybody here. You're all grateful. I
know. So your pick, Andrew's pick, Pedantics.
Exactly. Well, that's my pick. I got to be honest about that.
That's his OS.
Yeah. I decided to go way, way, way back and watch some of the original stories there. And it is very interesting to see, like, how, because, you know, at the time it was like 1963, whenever it came out, like, you know, they joke about Doctor Who having no budget, but those first episodes, like you see like part of the back of the studio in the back with some of those shots.
There's a reason that they decided at some point somebody had to make the call, which is more valuable, blank reel-to-reel tape or this episode of Doctor Who. And they kept deciding blank reel-to-reel tape, which is why I think there are 13 missing episodes of Doctor Who in the back catalog.
97 missing episodes.
97. That's how low budget. You know what? 50 years from now, they're going to talk about our podcast saying, can you believe that the Weird Things podcast didn't save every single episode they've ever done? They would just get up live every single week and just talk.
Yeah, they've released some of the missing ones because they had audio. Like, actually, I was listening to like one, the Marco Polo thing on Audible, because I'm like, what's this? Let me check this out. So, yeah, there are a number of missing episodes, which, you know, on our talk of AI, they've done like cartoon reimaginings of some of these and whatnot. And I'll say, like, I think it's cool. It's not like we've lost like great works of science fiction in some cases, but yeah, it is, you know, Doctor Who is iconic and it's one of the most important pieces of sci-fi IP ever. I do think that we're very not too far away from training all the Doctor Who episodes, you know, in an AI with the scripts, and then taking the scripts for the missing episodes and feeding it into the AI and getting, well, that looks exactly like what it is. Or the first two episodes was funny, is like they actually squashed the format a bit, but there's going to be a lot of cool stuff coming along the way as far as like reconstructing, redoing stuff. We've seen some bad AI reconstructions. I think some of the James Cameron AI stuff has not been good, but that technology's gotten a lot better.
So your specific pick is
old Doctor Who.
Old school Doctor Who.
All right.
Old Doctor Who. You watch the new Doctor Who?
Oh my gosh. Hey, real quick, you're watching old Doctor Who. Name a few characteristics of old Doctor Who. Just talk about the character.
Curious. Depends. Each Doctor kind of had a different personality.
Yeah. What are the universals among them?
Well, Brian, according to the canon now, the official canon, the first one was a woman. So.
Okay.
Black woman, according to the new canon.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The new canon. The new stuff. The new.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna say like this. Like, I am all for changing things up, redoing it, whatever.
Yep.
Just make it good. Just make it good. Make it worthwhile. Make me glad you changed a thing. Because otherwise, if you're changing a thing to just change a thing, all you're doing is just doing that. So,
yeah.
Profound word of wisdom from Andrew Main. I know. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Let me peek back before we wrap things up. Let me go to the Luma Dream Machine. Oh, doggone it. We're 13 minutes in. And they have not yet encountered a patriotic celebration.
Damn.
Maybe in after things.
It's in the queue, though.
We'll get it. 14 minutes.
Brian.
Yeah.
Oh, you already did yours. And I did mine. Look at that. We made picks.
We did all of them. What happens next?
Yeah. Gentlemen, it's been weird.